Blog Talk Radio.
You know I love you, right?
Love you too.
Ain't nobody got what we got.
No, no. Wanna be with my baby.
Yes. Shed blood from the concrete, baby. Don't get no better than this.
To reality and relationships. I am one of your hosts, KL Belvin, and my lovely and very, very, very expected wife, Tiffany Braxton Belvin. Are you there, darling? Oh, not yet. Okay, I guess it's just me. Well, my lovely wife will jump in as soon as she can, but thank you for tuning in to Reality and Relationships, where every Thursday, the wife and I do the best we can to give you our take on relationships from many vantage points here on GQ Palace Radio. And if you're tuning in from the website, thank you. And if you're calling in from the call-in number, which is 646-200-3838, We want to thank you, and we have a special show lined up tonight, so please stop what you're doing. Run and go tell somebody else who enjoys reading, someone who enjoys writing. There's going to be tons of information given out tonight. Also, my kingdom builders, my Christian brothers and sisters, jump on yourself. Text somebody right now. Tell them to jump on, because we're going to have a line full of kingdom builders on tonight and discussing what we're doing to make the Lord proud of us, or hope that the Lord will be proud of what we're doing. So it's going to be a tremendous show tonight. So as I'm sitting and waiting on my wife to join us, I'm just simply going to start filling you in on what has been an outstanding day. I got a chance to see a 3D picture of my lovely expected daughter, KL. Yes, her name is KL. And I have to say, oh my gosh, it was beautiful to see. Yes. The applause, love it. Yes, it was beautiful to see. And she has my big button nose, and you know, that's just a staple. I have those strong genes, so you know, if you did anything in science class, you know there's a dominant gene, and I happen to possess it. And it's that big nose. Now, not the Michael Jackson bell pepper nose, but it is definitely a Belvin trait with all my children. And I am ecstatic. I did a video earlier this evening and put it on Facebook, and I'll put it on my blog later on, too. I'm excited because I didn't get this chance with my daughters in the past. I have two other daughters, and you have to get my book From Gigolo to Jesus to understand the relationship flaws that I... Hey, there's my lovely expecting wife. How you doing, darling?
I'm good. I was having technical difficulties.
Not a problem. So I was just filling in the folks on today and just explaining to them that, you know, if they get From Gigolo to Jesus, you'll see that my relationship with my daughters has not been a positive one. I have many times talked about how my life was before I knew the Lord, and that affected my relationship with my daughters. And you have to read that. I'm not going to go into that tonight. But this is an opportunity with my new daughter coming up that I'm going to get a chance from beginning to beginning to be able to start from the start with her, so she can get to know her father well, and maybe I can make up for things I didn't do before with her sisters, I can do through her. So I am just excited. I want to thank the Lord for all that he has allowed Tiff and I to be a part of, and what he is allowing us to come up on and be a part of. So definitely glad you guys tuned in tonight. So, baby doll, I was saying we have a wonderful show. We have a flock of guests coming on, but before we get to the guests, how are you tonight?
I'm great. After today, it's so funny that the past few days, actually the past few weeks, even months, I've been trying to take care of business and, you know, with everything, finalizing the paperwork with my mom and everything. And between having to go into the offices to get documents, having to stay on the phone for hours, and I'm literally hours that I'm on the phone, on hold, waiting for someone to come on. It's so funny that I called one of the offices earlier in the week, and first thing in the morning, I think it was 9 o'clock in the morning, the automated system said, your anticipated hold time is 1 hour.
Wow. At 9.
Yes, at 9.
Couldn't even have had a coffee yet in New York. But actually, I think they opened early to 9, so you might have been well behind with that. So,
but
you know,
still,
anybody listening, the New York City Department of Education is not the well-oiled machine that a lot of people might be used to when they call in. You have
not.
65 Court Street, downtown Brooklyn, but it has like 19 different offices. And some may be on the same floor, some may be on a floor below or a floor above. And you could go through the runaround on one floor when all they would have to do is connect you to someone on the floor above, but they'll say, I'm not connected to that department. And you could spend a good week doing the paper chase back and forth, but these are the hoops that you have to jump through when you're dealing with the Department of Ed. I've been doing it now almost 17 years, so I understand my wife's stress. So go ahead, darling.
Yes, but I think really, today was like the greatest, and it was necessary for my spirit because to see our little one KO in a 3D picture.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because every time I go to get a sonogram, I always forget to ask. And that's the first thing people say to me, oh, did you get the 3D sonogram? I say, no, I had the regular sonogram picture, and I have that here at the house. But every time we went to the office, for some reason, I would just forget. I would see her on a screen, and then that was enough for me. So today I said to KO, I said, please remind me to ask about the 3D sonogram. And it's such a shame that, unfortunately, KL was not able to come in the room with me because he was looking for parking the whole time.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy. Crazy.
It was crazy. So I figured that maybe before I went into the exam room that he would get parking and he would make it in, but he didn't make it in, but the nurse actually gave us a picture of little KL and her little face, and she was so cute. As soon as her face,
big nose,
as soon as she popped up on the screen, I said she looks just like her father. The nose, the lips, just all the features, she looks just like her father. And I can't
wait.
There
go the beauty pageant. No chance of winning beauty pageant looking like that.
She has a handsome dad.
I know that, but handsome women ain't cool. Handsome women ain't cool. You want pretty women. Handsome women is not a cool thing. You have an impressive thing going on.
Now the anticipation of her arrival is even greater. We have 9 weeks to go, and I'm excited. I can't wait. It's amazing. And you know, I have to say thank you very much to Mary Jo Madden. She is one of my Facebook friends, and she reached out to me yesterday, and she said, Tiffany, do you need, she has a play yard and also a brand new crib that someone was giving away, and she said, do you need it? I said, of course I need it. So she is coming by sometime this weekend to drop off the crib and the play yard, and I greatly appreciate it because any little bit helps. You know, KL and I, we're trying to make ends meet. I'm not working right now. I haven't been working since November. So I have to say, Mary Jo, thank you. I'm sending a big hug and kiss to you for thinking about me and doing that for us. So.
No doubt. Thank you, Mary J. You know, a lot of people don't realize, and one of the things that Tiffany and I do not do is that we put everything on Facebook. That's true. And sometimes people go, well, how they put the good and the bad? Well, we agreed when we first decided to live our lives transparent was to make sure that we talk about the good and the bad. And I can tell you, it has not been easy with Tiff being out of work and how unceremoniously she was let go. And that's been a fight. And then it's just been very, very difficult. But the one thing that I have never stressed is money, the lack thereof, or even when I've had a bunch of it, because it's the one thing that can be taken and given. And you have to really mind where you are with the Lord when money is low, because money can start to alter your character if you allow it, the same way it can alter your character for the positive, it can alter your character. For the negative, you have to be in control all the time. And when you are in lack of money, when you are short and you start to question where things are going to come from, you could quickly start to make decisions. You can quickly start to make decisions that will cause you to make decisions that you shouldn't. Make you consider things that will line you outside your faith. So one of the things that Tiff and I have never done is gotten so down that we start to consider things that would put us in opposition to the Lord. We're also not going to get on and beg folks to, can you give us money, can you do that? I let folks know things may be difficult, but if they give, they give. The Lord's going to make a way, and you have to honestly believe that. You have to honestly believe that the Lord is going to make a way, and then leave it alone. Don't fret. Don't fear. Don't stress. And that's actually where we are. And so with tonight, that actually leads me to what we're going to do tonight, is tonight we're going to bring on all of the folks that are connected to the new Christian fiction anthology that's out right now, Soldiers of the Cross, because we want you to meet the people that we work with, network with, the people that are a part of this book, that put this project together, because too often, you know, you hear authors say, buy my book, but you don't get to meet the authors, and sometimes you do, and you don't like who you meet, but what we want to do is get you to meet the people. The words will stand on their own. The stories will stand on their own. We're going to talk about the stories tonight, too. But we want you to meet all the individuals involved, simply because, to me, I believe it's a special project. And so tonight on the show, we're going to have Maurice M. Gray Jr., Isaiah David Paul, and Allison M. Dees. And they're going to explain who they are, what they do, what type of kingdom building they're doing. And before we get to 10 o'clock, we're going to give you many reasons why you better run out and purchase this book. That, and we might run up in your crib with ski mask on and take your credit card and order like 100 books and then break out. You better not tell nobody, like set it off. No, we're not going to do that. But anyway, so I tell you what, we're going to take a quick one-song break, and then we're going to bring the whole crew in. We're going to bring everybody that's on the line. We're going to see who's called in already, and we're going to get everybody on, and we're going to start this party because I want folks to get to know these individuals that I have had, Tiffany and I have had the pleasure of working with, and I am so excited by this new project. I am so excited by Soldiers of the Cross because it is fictional, but it is something that I know is going to build the kingdom, and we hope that the Lord will be honored by our efforts. So we will be back to Reality and Relationships in one song, and when we come back, I'm going to introduce you to our guest, and we're going to get into this party tonight. And now is the time to make that text, make that call, tune in. We'll be back in one song.
Boy, if you ever left my side, it'd be like taking the sun from. You're everything to me.
All right, all right, all right. Reality and relationships. You know what? Every time I hear that song, I'm sorry. I know it's a beautiful song, but I'm sorry. That's Black Butterfly.
You know what's funny? I was thinking the same thing.
Is there anything new today? I'm like, come on. That was my joint years ago at the house party. Oh, you know what? I don't even want to talk about that because, you know. Anyway, because next you got to play Always and Forever, In Between the Sheets. So, you know, babies might mess around and get made again. We mess around, Kiel have another sister or something. But anyway. Thank you for tuning in to Reality and Relationships. Oh, man. I don't even know if I wanted that applause. There might be in trouble in a couple of months. But, yes, we're going to get to what we set up tonight, and I'm going to bring these individuals in. I know a lot of people give Tiffany and I credit for being a tremendously gifted married couple, but, you know, there are many others. And the couple that we're going to bring on right now is one of those other power couples who are making it happen, and the blessing is that they are in the literary industry. But you know what? I'm going to let them break down everything that they do, introduce themselves. So first, I'm going to bring them on together. We should have on the line Isaiah David Paul and his lovely wife, Allison Deez. Are y'all there?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
Hey. Hey, Phil. Hey, KL, baby girl.
How you doing?
I'm doing. How you doing? KL, y'all keep playing those love jams, and KL might have a cousin in a few months.
that's what's up. I'm trying to tell you. That's what we do. Where's the hubby?
Right here.
I'm here.
Okay. That's what I'm talking about. Well, guys, I want to welcome you to the show, and, you know, we've been talking about this, and I'm excited to have you guys on, man. So first, let me say this publicly. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything that you guys have done for the wife and I, the support, as well as this beautiful project. So I want to say publicly why I have you on the line. Thank you so much for all of the support and everything with getting this together and getting this to where it is now. When I say this, I mean Soldiers of the Cross, this wonderful anthology. So I definitely want to say thank you for just even putting this together.
No problem.
So just,
thank you
just
for your willingness to go and, you know, participate and spread the word. It means a lot. And I want to thank both you and Tiffany for, you know, the encouragement, because we've been going through too, you know, so it's the encouragement and the family that we feel from our, you know, family is not always blood.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
But we just want to say we thank God for you and thank God for you being family. And we're excited about the new addition. I can't believe it's only like 2 months left.
Yeah,
I mean, time
man.
Long.
Yeah. 9 weeks. 9 weeks. It just seemed like yesterday we posted that we're having a baby, and now here is only 9 weeks left. So I'm just trying to get to the finish line. I'm doing what I can to just get it to the finish line and get the baby home, and then we can go from there. Like I said, from beginning to beginning, not beginning to end, from beginning to beginning. So just get it here, and then we can start it all over again. You know what? Let's let everybody, because you know what? We know folks are going to listen to this tonight, and they're going to listen to this next week, and they're going to listen to this the week after, because I'm going to keep posting it until they get tired of listening to it. Let's tell the folks who you are and give them a little bit of your background, both of you, what you do separately, what you do together, so folks can really get an understanding of the power couple that you are. I know you may not see it as a power couple, but in these real dark times, to first of all stand in unity in marriage is a compliment first, because these are very dark and very nasty times, and it seems like marriage is under attack. So that's one compliment. And then to be business minded, and third thing is to be kingdom minded and to have it all together and putting it together to work. So I want folks to really get to know who you two are. So go ahead, the mic is yours.
Okay, I guess to really know who Isaiah and I are as a couple, and as it even ties into this anthology, I guess we have to go back to the beginning, which was Triumph of My Soul, that anthology with Elisa Gabrielle, and that is how Jay and I met.
Nice.
We were both in that anthology, and it started off as a friendship, and it really took from there. You know, neither one of us thought that we would be married almost 7 years, you know, 2 years into marriage, almost 7 years later. But, you know, God is good. And I love watching how the ministry has manifested from that one anthology to Soul of a Man to now here we are together again in some shape, form, or fashion as Soldiers of the Cross. And I'm excited. I'm just excited. I'm proud of you guys. It's just going to my spirit. You know when it's so good you can't even say nothing but
No, definitely. And you know, that's part of the joy, because you know, it's one thing to say let's do something, and we know, all of us know, and Isaiah, I know when you get on you can definitely speak on this. People will give you lip service to everything. And Allison, you know also, people will give you lip service in this industry, and they will say that they're going to do, and they will say they're going to give you this, and they're going to share this with you. And then when it's time for the rubber to meet the road, you're left empty-handed. You're left with your back up against the wall. So for me to present the project to me and then the idea behind it, you know what, Isaiah, you jump in here, Isaiah, because you're the one that brought this to my attention. So let's hear from you on this. So first, introduce yourself and let the folks hear your background, a little bit about who you are and what you've done.
All right, everybody. I'm Isaiah David Paul. You know, the author of the short story in the anthology, Follow the Leader. Also the publisher, owner of Solomon Waterwine, which published the book. I've been in the industry for 15 years. It's hard to believe. I've been in this industry since I was 16 as an author, publisher. I also manage an urban fiction author as well. And then I work with my wife on editing and do some light graphic design. So I've done book selling. I'm still book selling. So, I've done just a little bit of everything, and then we're putting together our event at the end of the year, too. So that's got a lot of my, you know, time and attention as well. Far as writing, I've done everything. So, you know, many types of secular stuff. And then I'm doing, my primary focus now is the Christ-centered titles that I'm doing in my young adult series I'm working on. Will come out later this year. So it's just, I stay busy. I'm always, and I think for me, what makes the project special is not only the different roles I play, but, you know, over time, you know, the willingness to listen to some of the people that came in before me, because when Elizabeth was working with me at first on Trying for My Soul and then later with Soul of a Man, it was, you know, I was trying to build my company, and she said, this is what you need to do correctly. You know, I've seen this, and this. You know, this is what's working. This is who you need to meet with. This is who you, you know, I had a little taste of it when I was affiliated with a very large street-lit publishing house. And I said, you know, I had a taste of it. That's what for my, you know, for the Christian stuff. She said, this is how you do it on this realm, and it's still, you know, still working. I'm still applying it. I'm learning new things. I'm combining what she told me and what others have told me to what, you know, to make it where I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one thing that people really don't understand, is that when you surround yourself with quality people and they give you quality information, it doesn't dissipate. It doesn't just fade off into an existence. It's things that you can go back to months, years later and reapply and reshape. But the foundation of the information will always be solid. And that's one of the reasons why in the industry, especially the literary industry or any industry, but especially in the literary industry, you have to surround yourself with solid folks, because so much misinformation is passed back and forth that you can really get overwhelmed with what's the truth or what's the right thing to do. And you go down a road, and when you get there, the road could be so negative that the cost hurt so bad that you may not be able to get back to where you were.
You got a question, baby doll?
Yeah, I did, because actually it's funny, because the fact that Allison and Isaiah, they're a couple working together from the beginning. When you first told me about this project, I immediately thought about us working together. So my question is to both of you. As a married couple, what are some of the highlights of working together on projects like these? Because I know what Kayla and I go through. What are some of the challenges?
Well, for me,
be honest.
The highlight of it is, you know, I really do enjoy working with my husband. I think we are great business partners as well as life partners, as my as our pastor would call it. The downfall of it is that is my most demanding customer.
Sounds familiar,
right there?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I mean, in the end, he pushes me to be greater, and I love it. I do. I love the fact, baby, that you really do push me to be greater. I mean, that means a lot to me. You know, not only does he support my dreams, but he pushes me to go past my dreams. At the same time, some of that gets on my nerves in the midst of it, but at the end of the day, I appreciate it. So, you know, just being honest, and he knows this, you know, because he's sitting here
grinning.
Sometimes
you got to be that literary Ike Turner. You got to be that Ike Turner to get it done. They don't understand, right, Isaiah? Sometimes you got to
And I mean, it ain't even like Ike Turner, but it's just like, that's good, but do this.
There you go.
Well, that's better, but why don't you do this? And I be wanting to say, dude, if you don't take this and go on, but, you know, the way he pushed me, and then at the same time, sometimes he'll give me, you know, free creative license, and that's how I came up with the cover for Soldiers of the Cross. I actually prayed about it, you know, well, I pray over all my projects, but I prayed about it, and then I searched, and I found several, you know, images that just, when blended together, it just worked. And I was like, it's gritty, but you know who and what the focus is, and that's Christ. And I am so proud. I mean, I swear this is my baby, you know. Just like people used to think that I wrote some of Isaiah's other titles because I pumped them so hard. I said, no, I didn't write them, but, you know, I'm just as proud as if it's my own title.
Right.
Definitely, definitely. And I got to tell you, I'm big on abstract, anything that is not standard, not the same as anything. I'm not big on stock photos, so I like when I see a mixture of anything that just has a message. I think sometimes what I've noticed with covers is that people are trying to overwhelm people with what they're putting on covers instead of trusting that less is more.
Right.
People are sophisticated enough to be able to see, especially with wording and word placement. And with the covers that we've designed, it's in the designers that we work with, one of the things that I've always said is I want something that is just, I want it to stand on its own because I feel you should be able to look at the multiple books that a company has done, and each book should be able to stand on its own. I shouldn't be blurred where all of a sudden they stop looking different and they all start to look the same. And I noticed that with so many covers now because you're starting to see some of the same photos because folks are not really challenging themselves. They're just grabbing what's available, what's free, and then trying to work around that. And after a while, readers, I believe, get bored with that.
Right.
They are getting bored with it. And I know, like, when I did my team series, that was one of the big things that we, you know, the team I worked with back then, that's something we set out to do early on. We said, you know, Gerald Imes had to be real big on the spine. And I wanted my name to be written in a way no one else wrote it. And that ended up being something I was known for. And truth be told, when you talk about those covers, you know, I had to do the majority of those covers myself. All I had was this program that I paid for, couldn't afford, you know, some of the other graphic designers when I first started. Now, mind you, that foundation is how I launched my, you know, at the time, my secular imprint that I also published on Christian books, too. And that's how I was able to go back and pay DaVita to do some of those other clothes. You know, those page books that I did, plus the Christian books I did at the time, too. You know, my friends, I asked them, you know, I said, look, here's $50. Can I buy this picture? If it was some pictures I thought I could work, and I mean, and it's some stuff. I mean, I was blessed. I mean, some of my teen covers are, even years later, stand out today. And
gotcha.
And speaking of real models, Miss Tiff, once you are comfortable and, you know, feeling up to it, I am looking for positive full figure images. And as we all know, you are absolutely adorable.
Oh,
love to,
oh, Lord, don't tell her that. Oh, no, more selfies. Oh, no. It'll be more selfies tonight.
And seriously, I would really love to have you because I am working on a inspirational full-figure romance line. So that's my next project in the wings. It's been hard to work on my own stuff with everybody else's stuff coming up, but I am excited, and I feel that this is the time. This is our season to shine together and even my season to shine, you know, on my own. So I'm excited, and I would love to work with you guys again.
Well, I would love to, definitely. Whatever you need, let me know. I would,
okay.
And I appreciate you even considering me. So
we'll be there in November, so we definitely
yes.
Gonna sit down. We're coming
you
down in November.
My
so
baby.
Definitely. You know, I want to say one thing with this being the year 2014 and all of us being kingdom builders. You know, 14 means completion, and there's a lot of rough things that we all went through during 2013. We're not going to go into the negatives, but there's a lot of things that we had to come through to get through now to right here. And 14 is looking bright because of those things that we dealt with in 13. And
right.
A lot of folk realize that the reason why we pray is not so much just for right now, it's for the Lord to pave the way that we can't see. And it's one of the reasons why we stay focused on the things that we do. Isaiah, I want to ask you a question because it's something that is interesting to me, and I want folks to hear it. Now, you do secular works, you do Christian works. How do you balance the two to where you don't feel that you're giving in to either one? Because I know secular folks expect certain things, and I know Christian folks without question expect certain things. How do you balance that when you have that particular pen in your hand at that time?
I think in my particular case is one in which a lot of the secular work that's out now is more catalog work, books that are 5 years and older. In the case of one title, I got the rights back, and that was when it comes to my secular things, and you know, and I'm gonna answer your question too. But when it comes to my secular thing, I think my stance on it and where I've come to the Lord, where I talked about it, was if it's gonna be out there, I want to manage and control how it's out there. I want to manage and control the avenues. I want to be able to take the revenue and then you do what God would have me to do with it, or take care of the house or whatever, you know, whatever He wants me to do at that time with it. So since it's already out there and I did it. Or in the case of with one particular title I'm working on now, I'm doing it, I have control over it. So that's a big for me because I've been in situations where I've ghostwritten for other people, and whether I got my money or not, at the end I wasn't too – I mean, yeah, when you ghostwrite, you do what your client asks you to do, but especially if things are not taken care of on a business end, you have no control over it, and then – is a situation now where one of my books has done exceedingly well. The company is well known, and it's known that parts of this book is mine, but I haven't even received the payment I was supposed to get, so I don't like the fact that I control how that is done. How I came about that is, you know, I was writing, you know, adult romances, extreme adult romances. I'm very big and well-known in the street lit industry because I was one of the people that was one of the first supporters. Because, you know, when I was young and 16 coming in the industry, I didn't have the love that some of these younger authors had. A lot of people, when I came in the industry, did not believe I was 16 and 17. When I was telling them it took Omar, Tyree, and Zane, when I talked with them, it was like, or when I actually met Omar, I was like, yo, this guy was telling the truth. He really is 19. He really, you know what I'm saying? You know, when I met him later, you know, of course, his uncle knew because I used to talk to his uncle all the time. So they knew, but everybody else would think I was lying and Omar was making it up that I was really older and I should know better or whatever. But, you know, I had some age maturity of a 16-year-old. So what happened now is when I first got saved in 2005, I thought I wasn't going to be writing secular works anymore. And done the first version of Love Him, what is known now as Love Him Like I Do. And when I kind of backslid and got back into doing secular books, like with the teen series, they have to be more open. And I had, you know, I had books that ran the gauntlet. I had some stuff to talk about Jesus, some stuff that didn't. And in my particular case, one of my adult titles or one of my pen names I wrote under, I did not have a say in how readers found out that I ghostwrote the project or that I was part of that project. So when I had to rebrand everything and do everything as Isaiah David Paul, when you go on my page now, that's one of the things I'm very open about my past. I'm very open in telling my readers that, yes, I've written extreme adult romances. Yes, I still have a very strong connection to the LGBT community. I've been very open about that. So this is not a surprise to my current readers. So it's not like I'm doing it in secret because I'm not the only Christian author that that ghostwrites as in secular fiction. I'm not here to, you know, put no one on blast for doing that, because I feel like where you're at spiritually, some people have different assignments for the Lord, and they may be doing something I don't know about. So I'm not going to, you know, do. But for me, being well-known in this, you know, street lit genre, being someone that has written numerous articles for some of the top review organizations that reviewed that, you know, for me, it was kind of like, well, since everyone knows I wrote this set of books and I wrote this book, I've done this teen series, I managed, you know, work with some authors on a very prominent street lit label. It's out in the open. And what I said this time was, I'm not going to tell y'all I won't do it again. I will say it is not a primary focus. And even though, you know, some books just came out recently, it's still not a primary focus. And I think that's what makes, you know, my Isaiah David Paul titles unique, because I can take some of those same drug dealers, some of those same murderers, rapists, video stars. My first book is about a video star. So I can take some of those characters that I was putting in secular situations and talk about their struggles in, you know, in the Lord. And I can relate to them, and I run into readers to say, you know what, we always see stories about, and I'm not bashing no one that, you know, was brought up in the church and, you know, lived in the church their whole life. That's the way you're supposed to do it. But not everybody that comes to Christ grew up like that. I didn't grow up like that. It's not that my parents did anything wrong. My parents gave me free will to choose the religion I wanted to be part of, thankfully for them. And for me, I found Jesus. You know, my mom was Baptist, father was Methodist. So they were like, you know, we're not going to force you to choose one or the other. You're going to have, you know, free reign to, you know, do that. And so now, like, when you look at my Isaiah David Paul titles, you know, some of my cleaner secular titles, I was able to, you know, brand them as Isaiah David Paul mainstream titles. They're not, you know, you're not going to see all the possessive cussing and other things going on that you would see in some of the other mainstream titles. And then, you know, like I said before, you know, the ones that are Christian, I label them clearly. And the ones that I can't use as Isaiah David Paul, I control how they're out.
Right. I got you. And, you know, that's – oh, go ahead. Is it that you did?
I'm going to ask Isaiah, with the fact that you do secular work and you do Christian work also, with your fan base, do you have any particular, like, are there – people who think that you should stick to one more than the other? Does your fan base put demands on you that you should do either all secular or all Christian?
No, and I'm gonna tell you why. You know, when I came in as a Christian author and was doing my first book, there were some people that had questions about it because they knew that I had done my teen series was secular for the most part, because I dealt with social issues, so they knew it was secular. But ironically, like when I was exposed for a set of LGBT books that I'd done and had a ghostwriting deal with, that that audience was the very first audience. They followed me. They said, you know what, we like you as a writer. We like you as a person. You said you were saved. We believe that. We're gonna stick with you. They went back and bought all of my books, and they're some of my biggest readers. And they're like, well, you know, you write this, and it's not, you telling the truth. It's not offensive. They're, you know, they have their own, like I said, this particular audience, they have their own, you know, there's some that are trying and come to the Lord, and they have their relationship, and there's some that they don't believe in God. So
right.
Gotcha.
For them, that's a, you know, I make it clear, this is a Christian book. I'm going to talk about Jesus. I'm going to talk about God. I'm going to show you examples of how people are coming from all types of forms of life and are making it with God and trying to learn with God. My biggest problems sometimes are from those people who are used to the older Christian stories or what has been branded as Christian stories that are church dramas that are about the family. Then if you, and I'm not throwing nobody under the bus, but I believe, honest, if you know anything about Gerald or JL or the other names I went through, you know that when I do my my nonfiction pieces or when I do my opinion pieces, I'm very blunt. A lot of those books did not glorify. I mean, you had pastors sleeping around, doing this, having side families. You had the first ladies gossiping, keeping dramas going. You had the ushers and the deacons leaving private lives and stuff like that. It was very soap operas. You know, it was very soap operas. And the only thing about the fact that, or that you could call it Christian, per se, was the fact that the characters appeared in church. But I forget the lady's name. It's Denise Simpson, the lady that founded Walkworthy Press. One of the biggest things she said that stuck with me is the difference between a Christian novel and a non-Christian novel is, do the characters glorify God? If they glorify God, then it's a Christian novel. And with some of my Christian titles, I make sure that there's some Bible verses. There may be a sermon or two, regardless of what the characters are doing or have come out of, or I'm bringing them out of, I make sure God is present. I may not even do a whole, one of the books I actually printed the whole Psalms 91, but then again, I may not even do that. You may can tell by the character's words that I may write, you know, put some, a Bible verse in there as an answer to a person's question. The character is saying it, and you'll tell, because if you know the Bible, then you know this character getting this sound advice.
Let me jump in right here, because I think that's one of the things that has to be understood, is that I believe that what folks get twisted with Christian anything is that sin can't win, but you have to tell a story. Because I think what happens, and I know myself, is I don't really worry about the writing rules. I'm as rebellious as they get. But the one thing, being a learned man, is that I understand the scriptures because I'm an educator. So I can teach about the scriptures so people can gain an understanding. Because many of the same folks that will criticize writers or folks in general aren't really learning the scriptures the way they should, because they're memorizing them. And they can tell you where everything is in the scripture. That's a beautiful thing. But to apply with an understanding to what real life is where many people drop the ball. So, of course, when reading, if folks are that way in their personal lives, and now they pick up a book and they're expecting it to line up with what they believe personally, well, that's where some folks are going to have an issue, because they're going to say, well, this is not Christian, because it's, stop right there. If I have a character who lines up with the Lord, who clearly is trying to do something that is within what the Lord is saying. And I am showing that the character who is outside of the bubble of the Lord understands what they're doing and still wants to do it. Well, that's real life. Because as many folks who sit in church who praise the Lord on Sunday, they're reading Mary B. Morrison on Monday. And you ask them, they won't say it, but they know the lyrics to every one of the secular songs as much as they know the lyrics to the hymns. So the thing is, you have to present, if you're going to be real about what you write, you have to present real-life situations, but you can't glorify the sin. And I think that's what people don't understand and lose a lot when you're trying to explain to them that the Christian base is that, no, my character won't ride off into the sunset after shooting 15 people unless he knows that hell is waiting on him. Because in the next book, he may get saved. So if you denigrate me now, how can I get to the next one and show you that God did a work on it? Because did we forget what we were before we were saved?
I think a lot of people do, because when I look at, and I try not to so much now, but when I look at the reviews, like if you like read the reviews that are posted on, especially on Amazon, being it's not so bad, but the people on Amazon, I've read some of the reviews for some of my books, and I'm not whining. Readers have a right to their opinion, but some of the reviews are very harsh about, well, I could tell you used to write extreme adult romances. I could tell you used to be in the street lit because your characters are doing this and doing that. I allow my characters to slip because we all slip.
Right.
You know, we all fall short. I mean, now as when I say a book is Christian, I have to be careful with how far I let them slip, because there's certain stores that will not sell certain things, which I disagree with that, but I oblige to a point, you know, when it comes to that. But then, you know, I think we have to change what people are seeing and what is branded, because I think for the last 10, 15 years, the genre really has been misbranded, and there's a lot of books that are called Christian fiction that really should not be called Christian fiction, because there are some books that are branded Christian fiction that I don't read, that are published by majors, that you don't see God in them once.
Right.
Yeah. But, and you also have to look at the publishing companies that put them out, that, you know, the Christian aspect is not really what they're trying to uplift. It's, let me see if I can tap into this market to be able to create profit. And the two don't always line up, because if you're going to line certain things up Christian-wise, then there's just certain things you can't do. And I think some people forget that. And so they'll just, well, let me put a label on it because they did it at the church, so it's Christian fiction. But Allison, jump in here for a second. Do you have restrictions with your cover designs? When people come to you, if they have, where is that line drawn for you with reference to designing? Where do you say, okay, you know what? Nah.
Well,
that's not happening even if you want to pay me for it.
That has actually been a recent battle with me, you know, with myself, because, you know, going through trying to make the ends meet, I'm like, okay, I need this money. Or even with editing, you know, I really, you know, I need this. But I'm learning our money ain't good money.
That's true.
True.
And, you know, I recently declared this year that I am going to go back to the basis and the purpose that I started my company, which is now, you know, a sub company with my husband's company, Solomon Water Wine. And because I called my company Boundlessly Blessed for a reason, because I wanted more God. I wanted to I wanted to be available, be able to be serviced to the true Christ-centered market. And that's where I'm going back to with my work. And it's a blessing. It's a blessing and it's a lesson. You know what I'm saying?
No, I definitely understand. I definitely, and I think that's what I want people to hear, because I think too often, you know, when I put the, when I promote and say Christian fiction, I know people are going to think the way that they think, but I'm going to try to make sure people understand where things are drawn for myself. And I put it on my website with Braven Publishing, Tiff and I exactly say what we're going to do and not going to do. Now, I don't knock anybody's hustle, nor do I judge what they do. Do what you do.
Right.
I'm not going to worry about it. Now, you may come to me and say, Kale, can you do this? No. What do you mean? If the Lord says, listen, that's fine. I said, I'm not. And I have no problem walking away from money. I have no problem not being connected to something. I don't care if it goes on to make millions of dollars. Because one of the things that I have learned, and is what you just said, not all money is good money. Also, you have to understand what your feeling is. And I find that if I have trepidation from the very beginning, that's the Holy Spirit telling me, step back a second. Because to even have trepidation when someone has asked you to do something, there's a reason for that. And I have learned often to take a step and say, well, why do I feel uncomfortable? And let me look at this all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't like where something is going, even if I have a bill to pay, that bill won't get paid that way. And I let it go. Because
you know,
I recently
learned that lesson in a major, major way. You know, I'm not going to really go into details, but I took on an editing project, and it was a very, very secular title. And just, I couldn't bring myself to focus on it and work on it. And then I said, God, why can't I finish this? You know, this should be an easy project. And it's just, my spirit just wouldn't let me work with it anymore. And I'm like, you know.
A headache.
Yeah. we would have to go take naps after looking at this project. It was that kind of. We gonna let that go because God got better for us. But
and that's a big thing. I'm hoping that anybody listening understands what Sister Allison is saying. Is that, you know, and I'm speaking directly to the kingdom folks, Christian brothers and sisters, is that we have to get back to trust in the Holy Spirit, because the Holy Spirit is a direct connection to God himself. We can't act like it's just some entity that is we call on when we need it, because then we're treating God in the same vein, and you cannot do that. So you have to be able to have discernment with self when doing business, or there's no sense in doing business. Because if you blur that line too often, now you won't get the trust that you need from the brothers and sisters who might actually need that healing of what you can bring to them. And then you have secular folks not trusting the God that you say you represent because you're looking like them or acting like them or being like them. So sometimes drawing that line in the sand means that folks are going to point fingers at you and go, so you going to stand right there? Yes, I am, because that's what Jesus did. Now, you take it any way you want to take it at that point. I'm not worried about it. Now, let's swing this around to Soldiers of the Cross, because I was excited when Brother Isaiah reached out and said, we're going to show how people came to know the Lord, but not in the ways, not so in the so-called traditional ways. And I thought that premise was tremendous, because it lines up with where my thinking is, that people, and it's part of what my story is when I talk about my book from Gigolo to Jesus, that the Lord spoke to me in a hotel 200-something miles away from my girlfriend, now wife, about to get into something sinful with a woman I had already got caught cheating with. And that's when the Lord decided to speak to me, because it was through my pain of disappointment when the chick said she wasn't going to show up, that in that sadness and in that anger, that's when the Lord finally said, okay, are you ready? Are you ready to do what I want you to do? And all of a sudden now the world became a better thing. So what I want to do is we're going to talk about Soldiers of the Cross and really get folks to understand what this anthology is about. But I want to take a quick break. We got to figure out what happened to Brother Gray. I sent him a message. I don't know what's going on. And Brother Gray, if you're listening, you got to press 1. To get in on the conversation, because I want folks to hear from you too. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a 2-song break so you can run, grab some water, do whatever you're going to do. And we're going to come back, and Brother Paul And Brother Alex Adiz is going to get into this whole book, because we're going to talk about the stories in the book itself, and what our expectations are, if any, for this project. And I know there are some great expectations. And so you're listening to Reality and Relationships. I am your host, KL Belvin. That is my lovely and very pregnant wife, Tiffany Braxton Belvin. And we'll be back in two songs. Don't go anywhere. Tell a friend to tune in.
to mess with your self-esteem. I'm here to remind you that you are a queen. As a matter of fact, young, gifted, and black. And you definitely ain't nothing wrong with that. So let confidence be your best friend. Cause where you're coming from, they can't comprehend. Just carry yourself with style and grace. No one can ever take your place. Cause you're a virtuous woman who demands respect. Like Michael said, they ain't seen nothing yet. Don't let nobody bring you down. Don't let the naysayers make you frown. Keep laughing, smiling, and no boy, don't let anybody
just hit me up and let me know. 11 years old. All right. Welcome back to Reality and Relationships. And we are going to jump right back into, because we have finally put the search out. We found Brother Gray. He was hiding online, forgot to press 1. So, you know, I was like, yo, we're about to put the search party out for the brother. Now, let me tell you real quick. This brother and I had the opportunity to do a signing back in 2010 when I got the chance to meet him. Incredible brother, incredibly giving, and nice brother. And when I saw that he was going to be part of the project too, that actually made my yes even easier, because the two brothers, and I get a chance, and we're going to talk about this given time, both of these brothers I was in an anthology with, Isaiah David Paul Emery's, The Soul of a Man, that came out in 2009. Now, that anthology won an award. We didn't get any award, but okay. But it won an award. So when Brother Isaiah asked me about being in the project and I saw that Brother Gray was in it, I said, you know what? I met this brother, wonderful brother. I loved the way he spoke about the Lord, and I loved the way things went at the signing. I said, hey, I'm in for that reason too. So allow me to introduce you to Maurice M. Gray, Jr. Are you there, brother? Did we lose the brother? Was he on, Maurice? Are you there, brother?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. How are we doing, brother?
I'm good.
Oh, man. You was on all that time, man, listening?
I was on. Didn't press one to get in. I did graduate college. Just thought I'd throw that in there. But
no problem, brother. Listen, introduce yourself to the people, man. Tell them who you are. Tell them what your books have been up until this point, man, so we can catch up so they can get to know you.
Okay. Like they said, I'm Maurice Gray, Jr., and I've been in the literary industry, wow, this is the 14th year. My first novel, To Whom Much Is Given, came out in 2000. Since then, I've put out a second novel, All Things Work Together, somewhere in between the novels, and then after the novels, I've been in, this is my fourth anthology, by the way, Soldiers of the Cross is my fourth anthology. There was one in 2003 called Blessed Assurance. Then there was and we did The Soul of a Man, which they just mentioned. After that, I did one called Home Again. And now, I guess I can't get enough of anthologies because I'm right back here in Soldiers of the Cross. Now, I've always enjoyed working with other authors, and anthologies seem to be the best way to do that. I don't know for 100% sure, but I believe Blessed Assurance was the first Christian fiction anthology, the one that started this wave of them that we have out now. And it was a blessing to be part of that.
Now, you heard the conversation on secular work and Christian work. What's your thoughts on it, since you were able to hear what Brother Isaiah and I were speaking about in terms of the secular work and that balance between the two? Is all your work Christian work, or do you write secular work also, or what's your take on that balance? Because I know you're connected to a lot of folks in both industries.
Yes, as in author, all of my work has been Christian so far, and I believe it's going to stay that way. I just haven't felt told to write anything else but Christian fiction. Now, as an editor, I have edited some work that is not Christian fiction. There's nothing extreme. Like, I kind of make it clear that I can't do anything like erotica. I've never had the opportunity to do any urban fiction. I would give it a shot at least once just to try it. But I have edited secular manuscripts before. It wasn't too painful. They were great people to work with. But in terms of the writing, I don't, like, unless I feel called differently, I'm always going to be writing Christian fiction. When it comes to editing, I am going to be selective about my projects, but I will edit a secular project if that person needs my help and I feel qualified to do it.
So where's that line? Where's that line for you? When you get that call for editing, for writing, ghostwriting, whatever, where's that line for you where you take a look at, you listen to what they're saying, you go, okay, you know what? Sorry, bro, I can't. Sister, I can't. Where's that line for you?
Well, for me, I've got to stay prayed up about it. And if God says no, I can't do it. And I have to admit, he said no about some Christian projects. And one, I remember one, I kind of ignored him, and I ended up paying for that later. So I really needed, I really made it a point. Like, I've got to stay prayed up when it comes to whether or not to accept a project or deny a project. That goes for anything. When it comes to what line won't I cross, I'd mentioned that I'm not going to do erotica. I really don't need to be subjecting myself to that. Unlike you other two in this anthology, I am single. I cannot be subjecting myself to certain stimulus. I can't be putting myself through all that.
You don't want to close the door to anything before you had
a chance.
I don't want to start no trouble, though I could have avoided. I stay away from the erotica. For the most part, like I said, I haven't had a chance to edit any urban fiction yet. I guess it would depend on the project. I would have to pray about it. Is this a project I need to be involved with? And if the answer was yes, I would get to it. Because one of the things that I'm passionate about besides writing is helping other authors with their editing needs. I mean, a lot of authors think they can't afford it or they don't see why it's important. I really hate it when I pick up somebody's book or if I see something advertised and I can just count the typos in one small paragraph. Or I can tell that they didn't really take any time to have anybody look at it who could look at it with a critical eye. I mean, you only get one chance really to put your best foot forward.
Let me jump in there for this reason. I'm going to tell you something because I do not have the lineage that you two brothers have, and that's why I am honored to stand with you two. But I want to say this to anyone listening to what Brother Gray just mentioned. When Allison and Isaiah sent me back my work and I read over it, let me tell you what an editor will do for you. Not only will it make you feel more comfortable about yourself, if you really can humble yourself and look at what an editor is attempting to show you in the changes or the suggestion, your writing grows because you start to see things in an eye that's not yours, but you're still using your eyes, looking at your talent. It's just finding the crystal from a rough part to being smooth. And when you allow someone to use their talent in combination with your own, the finished product becomes something that you might not even dreamed of looking at, but it's still your work. And you have to trust that as a writer. And I would say to any writers that's listening, please get yourself a quality editor who's willing to work with you by not just helping you clean up your work, that's going to make suggestions not just for that project but even for future work and tell you why the future work could work based on what they're looking at right now. Very, very important. And I want to do this now while we have folks listening. Let's talk about our stories in Soldiers of the Cross. Brother Grace, since you was the one on hold all that time, we're going to start with you first. I want you to talk about, one, what your story is about, and I want you to give the listeners something that they should really look for in your story. And the last thing is, what was one of the difficulties that you had? And I'm bringing this up because they don't get to share our emails. What was one of the difficulties that you had with trying to complete your story? Because I know you had wrote like, never had this problem before. So what do you think it was that was your most negative thing with trying to get it together? And Brother Isaiah, the same question, when he's done, we're going to ask you the same thing.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll I'll go to the last one first. I believe I struggled with this one so hard. Well, part of it was I got piled so much on my plate that I was having a hard time getting myself into that writing mode and staying there when I needed to. And then when I did get into that writing mode, I don't know what it was about this idea that was fighting me so hard, but it was just a struggle for me. Then I would get it written, and then I would look at it, and I'm like, oh, man, I just need something else. And I would go back, and I would reread it and say, okay, let me see, what do I see in this? And a lot of it was me getting in my own way. And then onto that being extremely busy and piling stuff on myself that I really didn't need to pile on myself. And what it came down to was I was the weakest link for a while. I know they were kind of wondering, is this brother ever going to get this thing written? I thought he was experienced.
I emailed you a few times, didn't I, Maureen?
Allison did send a firm email there towards the end, but I'm not going to say anything.
Oh, man. Okay. And so that was the last question for her. That was my struggle in getting it done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My story is called Outside the Line. When we were given the theme, we were told to work with unusual preachers. And that was I thought it was going to be really, really easy for me because I already had a character who was pretty much untapped. My main character is Pastor Travis Nathan. He's appeared in both of my novels and most of my short stories because most of my characters attend the same church that I made up, and he's the pastor. So he's been behind the scenes, he's been advising people, he's been guiding people. I figured now was a good time to give him his spotlight. And then I had to think, okay, what's unusual about him? One of the character traits that I gave him that even makes me laugh sometimes, I'm the one writing this, I make myself laugh with it, is that Pastor Nathan stands a good 6'7". He was an NBA potential player in college. Almost, he could have made the pros if he really worked at it. He was one of those fringe players. If he'd hung around enough training camps, he might have caught on with somebody eventually. And he had that kind of talent. But eventually he chose to give up that nomadic NBA life because he wasn't a sure thing. And he'd fallen in love, and he figured, let me find a sure thing because I want to get married. But he hasn't given up on the basketball gifts. Matter of fact, that's a major part of his ministry. I mean, he's just as comfortable behind the pulpit as he is taking somebody on the basketball court, schooling them completely, then after he's finished dunking on them, talk to them about Jesus. That's
gotcha.
A very unusual
gotcha.
Pulpit, and he loves that as much as he does preaching more traditionally.
Gotcha.
So the storyline for him is that he's at a point where he has been offered a chance to be elevated, so to speak, to take a higher office. I mean, depending on what denomination you're part of, there are different higher offices you can take besides pastoring a church. I mean, I'm an AME. In AME, we have bishops. And Catholics have the Pope. That's the highest office you can get to. I mean, other denominations have other different levels you can ascend to beyond just being a pastor of a church. And Pastor Nathan has the opportunity to be elevated, as they call it, in his denomination. He has to make a decision. Does he want to do this? Is this something he's called to do? And while he's like praying about it, he's sitting down with his wife and his closest circle. He's going back over some of his experiences. Basically, I'm taking you through what his normal everyday life is as a pastor. And part of it's on the basketball court, abusing a couple of teenagers who thought they could beat him. Some of it is him dealing with his church members, and sometimes anybody who's been to church more than once knows the church folk can be kind of trifling sometimes. part of it is dealing with the next generation. He's got some ministerial candidates he's been working with. He wants to make sure that when it's their time to go out and pastor, that they will be ready. He's sharing some of his experiences with them. And basically, I'm just kind of walking through his life a little bit while he tries to make this decision. And once I actually got out of my own way, it was pretty easy just to make it basically maybe a week or 2 weeks in his life instead of just trying to make it more complicated. All I wanted to do was show, okay, this is who he is and this is how he ministers. And this is the decision he has to make.
Excellent.
I really enjoyed that story. You know, yes, we went the long way about it, but the end product was so worth it.
Nice.
My favorite character actually
was his wife, Sister Annie.
Oh, you like
Her
Sister Annie, huh?
Was fierce. I'm like, okay.
Now y'all got to get the book, because we're not going to tell you who Sister Annie is. You got to get the book to understand what's going on here.
To say, beside every good man is a good woman, and his good woman doesn't take a whole lot of stuff off of anybody.
Right. If I think
very
when
nice.
You read this story and see who she is, that you too can relate to her, to what she goes through trying to keep other so-called sisters of the cross off of her man of the cross.
Yeah, that's something that everybody I know who preaches has that problem.
You see how the single guy was able to work in that, you know, got the ladies around him? I just want y'all to peep that, though. Did y'all notice that? That the single guy worked at that, the dude was being hounded by the ladies. Not that I'm saying anything. Because if you ever look at the pictures on Brother Maurice's page, he's always around the ladies. I just want y'all to notice that. So if you go by his Facebook page, he's always smiling around the ladies. So I am not shocked that in his story, the brother had ladies around him. You know, Brother Isaiah, man, step forward. Tell him about your story. And actually, I tell you what, tell him, let's stay with that framework. Let's talk about the most difficult part first, and then swing it back around to the story itself so folks can get a feel for that story, because I want folks to really understand, because I've had a chance. I haven't had a chance to read all the way through, but I've started reading, and I got caught up myself. I was like, I got work to do, because the stories really stand on their own. So come on up and tell them a little bit about what was one of your difficulties and what your story is about.
I think for me, one of the main difficulties was actually the follow-through. It was, although I ain't gonna lie, I took some time getting my story done too. Like when I told y'all the idea, I had so many pages written. Then I went through this period of months where, you know, I have an extensive catalog. You know, I went from having, you know, talking about some of my past, I had a moderately successful publishing company a couple of years ago that revenues were growing and stuff like that. And I started my previous adult imprint with an anthology, and was, okay, do I want to do this again? I have always dreamed of putting out an anthology. I remember when I first came out in 16, I wanted to get all these authors together. I mean, I would put out, I don't know if Maurice remembers, but I would put out calls for submissions at least twice a year, and I would get one or two people. I would never get anybody to want to participate and do something. And even with the anthology I did under my previous company, I originally was supposed to be in that anthology, but then I found another author that really, you know, wanted to get behind and support. So I gave up my spot so they could get in and shine. And then this time, it was, I'll just call for, you know, call for submissions. Lately, when I do call for submissions, I get responses. People see my work now. And I was like, oh, I'm actually in the anthology. You know what I'm saying? It's the last thing I've done, either as ghostwriter or as editor or as a, you know, backup editor. I'm waiting on the three or four people to do this story. And then I'm writing this book, and I'm writing, you know, sometimes I work on five or six projects at one time. And then it was like I had, you know, a calendar of what I was trying to accomplish, and, you know, it was like, dang it, I didn't get this rough draft done. I know another person may or may not be done. Let's push this back, y'all. And then it was like, let's push this back, y'all. And finally, it was like, you know what, I really need to get this book out. God has given me something else. He kind of told me, and it was funny because my romance novel that I'm working on, you know, features the same minister that's in this book. It's like, okay, now your romance novel is supposed to come out sometime this year. This book needs to already be out. So that's finally what led me under the fire to do it and just, you know, get to it. You know, normally I'm not a procrastinator, But this particular time, I was like, I'm actually going to be in an anthology that I did a call submissions for. So I think that was my biggest challenge. And then my story, you know, as I said earlier, is called Follow the Leader, and it's about Minister Hammer. He appears. This is actually a new set of, for the most part, very new set of characters that I'm working in. Without giving the whole story away, there is a connection to some of my other books with this one. And kind of like what Maurice said earlier, you know, like a lot of his characters, they may know each other, they attend the same church, different things like that. My books kind of follow the same path, especially like when you get to the end, it's kind of like, wait a minute. I didn't know this was going on, that was going on. But Minister Hammer is not your traditional minister. He did his time in prison, and he went from being an ex-con to being a self-made millionaire. He had a person, you know, lead him and guide him and use what Jesus told him to do to help him build his business. And now he's in a position where he's looking at different people to help and mentor, and he finds these two in this book is two people to mentor, and you know, one of them is in the street life and is doing his thing, and another one is actually leading an abusive relationship. And then, of course, with it being set in Asheville, North Carolina, we have a reputation for being weird, so they say.
You're going to leave my hometown alone,
Dad. I write about that, and, you know, and talk about, because I talk about some of the struggles, some of the young ministries here and older ministries here, you know, go through here. Untraditional ministry, he has a company called the Christian Cab Company, and his company has certain rules, and just like, you know, Maurice said earlier, you know, that's where I'm probably more comfortable stepping in and out of erotica than he is. He has rules, and one of those things he won't do is he won't take you to the bar. He's not going to drop you off at a known raunchy party. He'll pick you up. Now, if you get you home safely. Now, you know, sometimes if he picks you up, he's drunk, he's not even gonna charge you. But when he picks you up, he'll put that word in there. You'll hear the gospel music playing in the background. You know, he'll say certain. Then that's actually how he got one of the guys he's mentoring. Is, you know, he gave them a ride home, and you know, he saw that this was someone that had potential and wanted to get saved. And you know, there's some drama with that. Like I said, the guy he picks up is in a very abusive relationship, and that you know, plays out throughout the book. And he, you know, having to remember while, you know, he's mentoring other people, he himself needs mentoring sometimes too, because he has a very strong street edge, and you know, he's tempted just like, you know, other people, and sometimes. Of you feel like when you're the leader, that's why I think some people who get that call to, you know, step in front of the pulpit or lead in ministry, they don't want to. They remember when last week they were doing this, the week before they were doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes that you know, what you don't see is our leaders get advice and counsel too.
Yeah, you can put that pressure on. They don't realize the pressure that the leader's on under, because he has to not only be able to lead, he's got to be able to check himself, and that dual-edged sword can be very dangerous to hold on to, especially when you've made that commitment to step up and be the shepherd. A lot of folks don't stop and think of that. You know, I want to say one thing. I'm going to talk about my story real quick too, but I want to say that looking at you two gentlemen's work, for myself, I can honestly say one of the biggest negatives for me was I kept saying to myself, like, it was like an all-star basketball game. I'm looking at one side, I'm like, okay, he got rings. Okay, he got rings. And I kept forgetting. I'm like, okay, I got one, but I'm looking back up. I'm like, I got to put my game together. So I better get on top of my grind. And I think for me, my biggest negative was I had to stop doubting that I was able to do this, because one of the things that I had to remind myself is the brother would not have reached out to me to be a part of this if my work wasn't capable of holding up. And this is where I got to give your wife tremendous kudos and shout out, is that when I had gave her the raw version of it, she had said to me, your story just has, is, I remember I got the instant message, and so I'm showing my age, I am. I got the message, and she said, flashback to AOL. Anyway, she said, when a story can make you get excited about someone getting saved, you know you're on track with something. And I was so moved by that, because it was what I was hoping to get across. So it actually helped ease the negative feelings that I have of, will my work hold up with these two polished authors? Because I wanted to make sure that a person doesn't read the book and go, well, these two guys are pretty good, but this cat here, why didn't even put him in the book? I was like, I want to be able to make my jump shots when I'm open. So I said that was my negative. But then when I created my story, I stick to what I know. In this case, Kevin, my character, is a ladies' man, and that's his thing. And he's a teacher. I know something about teaching. I know something about these women. And so, but having him having emotions about what he knows is wrong and trying to deal with that, trying to serve two masters, my thing was I wanted to keep it very real with church folks, because if church folks would keep it real with themselves, then when you read, all of us have fell short of the Lord, it'll make you understand that you're going to trip. It's not if you're going to, you're going to. You're going to fall. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to fall all the way back to what you were when you were really in the world, but you're going to misstep. But that's what makes God so great. My thing was, this character's fighting, and I wanted to have folks, secular or Christian, saying, well, give in to this one. Nah, bro, keep doing you. That's why I gave them two friends who were polar opposites. Because many of us try to act like we don't have friends who on one side will say, man, come on, let's go to the bar. And other friends are going, come on, let's go to Bible study. So we'll go to Bible study and then go to the bar afterwards. But we try to balance that, and that balancing act sometimes can be toppled by something happening. So in my story, that something happening is for you to say, wow, and then see where it ended up. And I think when you sent me the email and said how my story played along with you two guys' work, it really moved me, because I said, you know what, looking at you guys' work and then looking at my work, I said, there was a great accompaniment to all three stories. And I really believe anyone who reads this book are going to be able to find something about themselves in all three stories. I really honestly believe that. And what's your thoughts on overall your expectations for the book? Isaiah, we'll go with you first. What's your expectations for folks when they pick this book up, or when they open up their Kindle or Nook and they start to read this? What's your expectations from that?
I guess my first one would be that something they haven't seen in a while. I mean, I think it's been a very, and I'm trying to remember because I don't remember seeing it. Maybe Maurice can point me if I'm wrong, but since Soul of a Man, there hasn't been a collection of males who have gotten together and written fictional stories about Christ. I mean, you see a couple of nonfiction stuff here and there, but there hasn't been a collection. I would say before Soul of a Man, I don't think there was one, but I wanted them to see that, you know, brothers can come together and write about Christ. I think that's something, you know, for me, that's something that's lacking. You know, I can name all a great amount of, and I'm not bashing female writers or readers when I say this, I can name a whole bunch of great female writers that write for Christ. I can name very few males that I can say have written. I mean, most of us, like, we get two. We can't get beyond the second book, especially if you're with a major. It hasn't been, I mean, I can name one author that has done, I think this is his third book. The book is out now. It's his third book with a larger company. But I wanted to show that we can write about Christ too.
Gotcha. Brother Maurice?
Yeah. Just with this book, I really do want people to pick it up and say, whoa, this is different. Pretty much the same thing that Isaiah was saying. I want people to not to hold on to that attitude that men really don't write, especially don't write Christian fiction. Most people think male author, and the first thing they go to is, oh, is it urban?
True.
When I first got into this, I could count on one hand and have some fingers left how many men were writing Christian fiction.
True.
It's starting to grow, and I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, because we were dominated by the women that were writing all the stories out there. We didn't have enough men, actually, because, one, we don't have enough men that's in the church who seem to do the to do the outside outreach. We have a lot of ministries, but the literary aspect to the church in many churches across the country don't seem to have that output. We have singers.
Mm-hmm.
We have songwriters, and we have playwriters, but we don't have literary writers who are actually writing stories and books dealing with situations that men need to hear, as well as the women.
Exactly. We definitely need to get the male perspective on this stuff. Because, I mean, everybody, there are plenty of female authors to go around. I love reading them, but it's something unique when a man is ready to write, and especially a man who's willing to write Christian fiction.
Yeah,
I mean,
because that submission and the humble part comes through also.
Exactly. I don't know what it is. It seems to be some kind of a perception, a misperception, I'll call it, that there's something about a man writing Christian fiction that's soft. I don't know where that came from, but I've heard that.
They ain't read none of my books.
They clearly haven't read any of our work, if that's what they're thinking.
Ain't nothing soft about my character. That's the problem.
No. Yeah. I mean, I was reading your story. I was cracking up. I'm like, yeah, that's a good. This fits right in.
Ain't nothing soft about him.
Exactly. And that's what I really want people to be pleasantly surprised when they read it. I want this to be, oh, this wasn't what I was expecting. I thought it was going to be, okay, well, it's going to be very pleasant, and it's going to be, because it's a Christian fiction. No, it's real life.
Don't jump
I
up
mean,
and
I don't know
you.
Any perfect Christians. I mean, the minute I meet a perfect Christian, maybe I'll write about one. But
yeah,
until then.
Allison, you know what, Allison, jump up here. And the reason why I'm going to call on you this is because Brother Maurice says something that's very important, is that the perception. Now you created a cover that doesn't give away a lot, but it tells a lot because you see the Bible, you see the steeple in the back, and I think this is where your work is so affluent to what we created, because now you read the stories and your cover hides them perfectly. So you don't get to look at the cover and go, nah, then the stories ain't gonna be You don't get that luxury. And even when you read the back language, you still get a sample, an appetizer to what you're going to get, but you still don't get the meal until you open it up and start to go through these stories. So my question...
That was my whole point.
Thank you. Here's my question as the lady of the group. Tell the women listening, why these three stories, they're going to need to curl up on the couch and really get into these three stories. Tell them why they need to... get this book.
Real talk, these stories in each unique way are so compelling. I mean, I could see myself or my former self and Tail and some of your characters that interacted with Kevin. Maurice, in your story, I could see myself and Pastor Nathan's first lady, you know, going back to my extended Trinidadian roots. You know, I was born and raised here, so no, I don't have an accent or any of that, but I knew where she was coming from, and I knew where she was about to go. And then I guess the closer for me was Isaiah, my baby story, because not only can I relate, I've fallen in love with those characters as if they're my own, to the point that you're going to meet a few of those characters They won't have big roles in some of my upcoming novels and novels I'm working on now, but you're going to meet some of those characters, and I'm actually creating some of those characters' family members to be epic characters in my own novel. So, you know, this is not the last, well, it wasn't the last of Minister Hammer anyway, but it's definitely not the last of Minister Hammer. We're just getting started. I'm excited. You know, you're taking jointly.
Nice,
we
nice.
Are taking some of our secular works and turning them into a Christian novel. You know, bringing those, actually going through the motions of going to start it off with, you know, some of the other secular scenes and bringing it forward into where those characters are literally carried to Christ. And
Amen. Yes,
some of them go kicking and screaming, but they go.
And, you know, that leads me to, it's interesting that you said that, because my story in The Soul of a Man was originally one of my favorite erotic stories when I was an erotic writer. And mm-hmm. when I made the decision that I was no longer going to be an erotic writer, I was an outstanding erotic writer. I actually had a following and everything. They were so upset when I gave it up.
Do you remember when I was also an erotic writer in the plus size lit industry
you?
Right.
No comment. Anyway, yes. Fats X was my name, but yes, I had an incredible erotic following. Yes, I do remember. I'm just messing with you. I do remember. I try not to think about those days because it's funny how some people want that guy to come back. But I thought about it, and I said, if I can really write for the Lord, if this gift is given to me from the Lord, and I said this to myself, I should be able to take anything that I put down on paper, and if I'm going to turn it into something for the Lord, then I should be able to turn anything that I was going to work for the devil, I could work for the Lord. And sure enough, when I made the changes and submitted them to Elisa, she said to me, it was funny, she said, I wasn't sure where you were going with your story, but she said, but when I got to the end, and then I went back over it, and I said, you know what, I now get it. And hearing her say that, and I had only been in the game about a year at that point with just a poetry book out, but to hear someone who does this on a regular basis say that they got it, that I had it, I said, you know what, that's exactly what I'm going to do, continue to do that. And so Soul of a Man was such a breakout for me, because when I looked at the lineup of gentlemen, and Brother Maurice can tell you, when we was at the signing, you know, just sitting and talking to Baba and him, and the three of us was just sitting and talking, and we were just talking about some of the names of the brothers in the book. It was an incredible lineup. I still don't think the brothers, as it was constituted, really put all the effort that we really could have to make that book even bigger than it could have been, because I know it was very successful for me when I went to various places. People loved it and
yeah,
continued to buy it wherever I went, because once I explained to them what it was and the number of men that was in it, and the premise behind it, they loved it. But Brother Isaiah and Brother Allison, what I want you to do is, because we got about 14, 15 minutes, I want you to take a couple of minutes and explain your literary event that you have coming up in November. Brother Maurice and I will be there. My wife will be there. Please explain your literary event and give out that information, because here's what I'm going to do. Once you do that, I'm going to go around to everyone, myself last, and we're going to give out all our information, because I want to answer the question of how folks work within an anthology. Sometimes I don't think people understand how that works, and I want to discuss that too. So quickly discuss your literary event that you guys have coming up in November so we can get that word out right now.
Oh, my God. We are so excited. It's called the Asheville Literary Reunion. We are putting it down like a family reunion. We are looking forward to meeting and greeting and reconnecting with the literary family. I am so excited because I will be meeting many of you for the first time. We chose November, where first we wanted October, but we ended up with November because November for us is our personal month of completion. It's my birthday. It is the month that we first started dating. It is the month that we got married. It's that full circle time period for us. And so we are excited to meet and greet you, you know, finally get the hug, our brothers and sisters. And it is November 1st, 2014. This will be my first time hosting an event like this. And the venue is just beautiful. We do have, you know, after events for the office planned.
We have special seminars that are not, that I haven't seen. I've been to multiple events. I had the privilege of seeing the guy who planned the North Carolina Black Book Festival in 2006 in my hometown, Winston-Salem, and watching him the whole year and a half before the event took place. And this is the event where they honored Jacqueline Thomas for her literary work. Put that together, and then I got to watch someone else in North Carolina do an event, and had done several events and stuff like that. So it's like, this is my first time, you know, doing it on my own per se, and I can do it with my wife. It's the first time actually, you know, taking the lead instead of seeing the stuff that's going on in the background. And one of the things I'm excited about is the fact that as it stands now, there are at least two seminars
confirmed.
Two seminars confirmed, one of which has, and the other one we're working on is one that has not been done at any literary festival.
And we're actually thinking up and concocting another one that was just laid on my heart within the last couple of days. Like, you know, we should do one more seminar. You know, I don't know, but yeah, one more seminar. And, you know, we've kind of been going back and forth. And so we're just so excited. I know I've said that like five times, but I'm really excited.
No problem.
Excellent.
Give them the website. Give them the website for the literary event so they can get that. And any phone numbers, contact numbers, emails, anything for the literary event.
All right. The official website for the Asheville Literary Union is AshevilleLiteraryReunion.com.
And Asheville is AsheVille LiteraryReunion.com.
And that is also the email address, AshevilleLiteraryReunion@gmail.com. Authors, the tables are $150. If you're going to be two or more authors working together, or if you're coming with a publishing company, if you come with a publishing company, come with me. Authors as you want. We're only providing tables for six, but if you come with me, authors as you want. For two,
chairs for six.
Chairs for six. For $275.
Gotcha.
I think it's a great deal. It's kind of in line with what everybody else is offering. We're going to have some other marketing packages to get available. One spoiler I will give away is that if you can't come to the event, we will have something that hasn't, well, I can't say it hasn't been done, but it's not frequently promoted. We will have a bookstore on site. So if you can't come to the event,
send
your book, and we'll sell them.
And we'll pump you anyway.
We'll pump you anyway.
We are our authors, you know, and I'm not talking about little continental breakfast or little juice and cookies. I'm talking about we are feeding our authors, and they, you know, so, I mean, because it's a reunion. I mean, that's what it is.
If you're coming to Carolina, you got to get that food. You can't come to Carolina and not get that food. Cats, we'll talk about you. I done came to North Carolina, I ain't getting no food. I ain't coming to Carolina for no continental breakfast. Not North Carolina, Somebody better get the kitchen. Let's go.
And we are hoping that you and Tiffany and Maurice will be able to stay for the whole weekend, because a couple of authors who have already committed, we had talked about all getting together and attending church the Sunday afterwards.
Okay. November 1st, we're gonna make arrangements. I'm gonna make arrangements with school so that way I can get the day at 12. So we should be all right. So. We're definitely going to work on that. And we're going to have you back on the show anyway to talk about that, because we definitely want to promote that event. But in the last few minutes, here's what I want to do, and we'll start with Brother Maurice this time, because what folks have to understand with an anthology is that when you have three different authors, you're going to have three different websites, even though we're all connected to the sales of the book. And because sometimes folks get confused and they're not sure, you buy it from all of us. Let me say that again. Buy the book from all of us, because whether you get it from Brother Gray, Brother Paul, or myself, the sales are generated to be able to allow us to do more of what we're trying to do. So don't contemplate. Get the book. I don't care which of us you get it from. Just get the book and tell as many people about it. Don't give your copy to somebody and so one book passed around 25 people. I ain't trying to hear
that. Please don't
go
do that.
And get the book. Download the book. It's available on Nook. It's available on Kindle. Thank you, Brother Rich. Thank you. But no, seriously, because, and I say this in the videos that I create, because that's one thing I'm big on, I'll promote all day, is that black-owned businesses survive by word of mouth, but also sales. Let's stop playing. We have to sell the book to be able to do future projects. So don't just tell us that you liked it and then you didn't leave a review. Don't just tell us that you liked it but you only bought the one copy and you got 17 other people who saying they're going to get it. Force them to buy. Somebody's birthday coming up. Somebody in your church is going to love to read this book. Somebody is sitting around their house talking about, I'm going back and read something I read 3 years ago. No, get this book because you're getting close to 60,000 words. This ain't no short story book.
Over.
With about
yes, 15 over.
So you're getting a novel-sized book, so you're going to enjoy these stories. Stop playing with yourself. Stop joking and thinking, I don't read short stories because they trying to rob you with these little tiny
stories.
Ain't story. That ain't this. That ain't this. I got the PDF. It ain't this. So I'm saying that so. Here's how we're going to do it. Brother Maurice, give them your website or where you sell your books from. Isaiah, you're going to do the same thing, and I'll end up behind you. So this way, folks can decide to do it any way that they want to do it, but I want them to have all three of our information. Go ahead, brother.
My website is www.writethevision.biz, WRITEVISION. Dot B as in boy, I as in iris, Z as in zebra. That's where you'll find out how to get a copy of this amazing anthology. You'll also find out more about my other books and about my editing services.
Excellent, excellent. Brother Isaiah, Allison, your companies, everything that you want to give.
All right. I'm going to start with the company website first because it is available for order on the website. And the company's name is Solomon Waterwine. So S-O-L-O-M-O-N, waterwine.com. My personal website is Isaiah David Paul, named after three great men in the Bible.com.
Maybe tell them about why your company is called Water Wine. Tell them about that because I love
real
it.
Quick,
get
em, real
quick. Get them.
The reason why my company is called Solomon Water Wine, let's go around. Is Solomon was one of the wisest men in the Bible, and Jesus' first miracle was turning water into wine.
Amen. Amen. All right, and of course, y'all know every week when you listen to this, Braven Publishing, B-R-A-V-I-N, publishing.com. Braven is actually Tip's last name, my last name combined, because the company is a combination of who we are. So there was no way that we were going to name the company anything else. It is a reflection of who we are as a couple and who we are as friends and everything else. And with a couple minutes left, I want to say this to all three of you while we have you online. May the Lord bless all three of you in everything that you do. Soldiers of the Cross is going to be and is an outstanding project. And let's really continue to keep this in the thoughts of people out there. Let's force some of these kingdom folks to put their money where their mouth is, because if folks can stand online to buy new J's, they can stand online to purchase this book, because we don't have enough folks standing up and saying they're going to do for the kingdom and then actually doing. We got a lot of folks taking and saying they're building from the kingdom. We're giving. And I said that before, and one of the things that I posted is that when somebody is giving you 60,000 words for the $15, you compare that to what you're being charged for some of the stuff that's out there, and you're going to see that what you're getting, you're actually being given something. So I say to anyone listening, please support these three. They are tremendous talents, and support this book. Please don't just talk about it. Please go out and get the book, because for us to create other projects from this, we need to know that folks are enjoying what we do and not just paying lip service to it. So, and you better tune in next week, because if you just tuned in tonight, I'm going to be upset. But now, with that said, my lovely wife, who loves to play the background, she's been doing the manager thing on the computer today. What do you want to close out with today?
Actually, I want to thank all three of our guests for coming on this evening. I'm looking forward to reading Soldiers of the Cross. I can't wait. Usually when I'm reading, I'm very Kale's story, but when I'm reading for editing purposes. I am not reading for the joy of reading, so it's a totally different aspect of reading.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to reading all three stories, and I'm also looking to meeting all of you in November. Definitely. I can't wait. And I thank you all for coming on this evening.
Oh, one thing before we go. Brother Gray,
yes.
I have a gentleman that's going to reach out to you who lives in Wilmington, because we're going to try to put together some things in Delaware with some churches in Delaware, and we're going to try to see if we can push them up against the wall to let us come sign some things in Delaware. And he's going to reach out to you also just to connect that I'm working with. And I do a lot of business down in Delaware, as you know. So when I come that way, you and I are definitely going to get together and see how we can make some things happen down there. So listen out for Brother Arthur Weathersby, and I'll send him on word to reach out to you, and we can get that started.
Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a tremendous show. The archive will be up. It is the same link that we use to promote the show tonight. You guys definitely go to the site, and you can take the embedded code and apply it to your website. So this way folks can come to your websites and listen to the show. The link is on my Facebook page. If you've been listening tonight to Reality and Relationships, please spread the word about tonight's show. Get a copy of it. Send it on to an author that you know, to your church, to your organization, anything. Reach out to all three of us. Have us all together. But remember, we are professionals. We do not travel just because you're going to cook us some chicken and you're going to smile and wave at us. We actually have expenses. We're not trying to rob you, but as professionals, things have to be paid for us to get to you. And please understand that we have products to sell. So do not say we're trying to rob you when we've already created the books. You do not go into McDonald's and complain about McDonald's robbing you. You pay for the Big Mac because that's what you want. Well, this is what we're trying to do here. So please take this information and do with it what you will, but definitely support us in any way possible. I want to thank everyone, and I wish everyone God bless. And thank you and good night. Baby doll, close us out.
Good night and God bless.
Good night.
You know I love you, right?
Love you too.
Ain't nobody got what we got. Better than this.
Yeah.
We've had some ups and downs, made a lot of bad mistakes, but we've always had some good times, and through it all, you held me down. Baby, you've always held it down. Oh yeah.
There were times when I was afraid and wanted you to leave, but you stayed right here by my side. You never let me go. You always stayed around.
That's right.
You stayed around.
And you've been so good to
and
me.
And it doesn't matter. I know whatever comes our way. You know, you and me, we gon' stay together.
I just wanna give you, make love to you, put you on a rocket, fly, keep on.